Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today from the American Pastors Network. We proclaim truth in the public square by connecting a biblical worldview and constitutional principles to the most significant news of the day. Simple, careful, and truthful. That's Stand in the Gap Today. Now, here's your host.
Good afternoon. My name is Joe Green, and I'm hosting today's program, Stand in the Gap Today, along with the Honorable Sam Rohrer. Today's program is titled, My Body, My Choice, Religious Exemptions and Pro-Choice Agendas. There's an article that I want to share with you from August the 30th, a U.S. news article, and it's titled, More Companies Mandate COVID-19 Vaccines for Employees, But Is It Enough to Make a Difference? And I want to read a couple of excerpts from the article. And it reads, President Joe Biden last week made a plea to the private sector with Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine approval from the Food and Drug Administration in hand, more companies should require their employees to get the shot. Today, I'm calling on more companies in the private sector to step up the vaccine requirements that will reach millions more people. Biden said, if you're a business leader, a nonprofit leader, a state or local leader who has been waiting for full FDA approval to require vaccinations, I call on you now to do that and require it. Several companies moved forward with vaccine requirements this week, including CVS and Delta, along with the New York City school system and the Pentagon. And the nationwide vaccination rate is ticking upward after seeing a massive drop since its peak in April. But with just over 52% of the U.S. population fully vaccinated and coronavirus cases, deaths, and hospitalizations on the rise, public health experts say the steps taken don't go far enough. Relying on individual institutions like we had relied on individual institutions, businesses, and states to enforce a mask mandate, which we know is safe and effective and probably less intrusive than a vaccine, hasn't worked, says Sadia Khan, an epidemiologist at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. As you may well know, the Bill of Rights talks about our inalienable rights that are God-given and non-revocable. So does employer mandate vaccines violate our individual rights? More specifically, what about those who believe that requiring someone to inject a synthetic material into their body is a violation of their religious liberties? Are there any accommodations for those who would like to opt out of taking the CV shots? On a couple of fronts, there are a lot of people that have real reservations about the CV shot. First, from a biblical perspective, many people believe that the CV vaccine is a precursor to the Book of Revelation's Mark of the Beast. It's not a far reach to see how this could be seen as an attempt to keep anyone from buying or selling unless they take the Mark of the Beast, in this case, the CV shot. On another front, there are some very well educated and informed doctors and medical experts that have expressed real concerns surrounding the shot. mRNA is a relatively new technology being used on humans, and there is no data on the long-term effects of the medical treatments. Also, there are a few treatments that have been previously approved by the FDA for human use that are not being promoted as a remedy for CV-19. Recently, and this is on a personal note, one of my YouTube channels was taken down, and the reason that they gave was that I violated community guidelines. The violation was that I made statements that contradicted the World Health Organization's narrative. The ironic thing is that the World Health Organization and the CDC has repeatedly contradicted themselves. The shadow banning and censorship of dissenting voices is a definite red flag, in my opinion, and a clear violation of the First Amendment rights outlined in the Constitution. And those rights are, of course, rights of free speech, which if you contradict someone's narrative, you should have that right to contradict or disagree with someone, and also our religious liberties. Today with me, of course, is the Honorable Sam Rohrer. He's going to be co-hosting with me. And I'd like to ask you, Sam, can you briefly give your take on these employer mandates and what you are seeing out and about?
Joe, I can. Yeah, we are very much in this space. And of course, when I come at this, I come at it from perspective of a moral perspective as the president of the American Pastors Network. But I also wear a hat as a former legislator, having taken the constitutional oath 9 times in my life. And I think as we look at this thing, Joe, in the end of the day, what you have is you have, and I've asked multiple individuals, I've had Matt Staver on his program as an example from Liberty Counsel. I've had attorney David Smith, a rabbi and a constitutional attorney from New Jersey. I've asked both of these guys this question. Is this mandate by anybody, an employer, the government, or anybody of an individual to submit to something, this shot, this injection, or frankly, to anything that would be forcibly put into your body? Is it constitutional? Is it lawful? They're not quite the same. And is it moral? In every case, it was flat out on both sides from both perspectives. It is not constitutional. It is not lawful. And it is certainly not moral. Now, just a couple of reasons. I mean, from a bigger perspective, the Bioweapons Convention Treaty would outlaw such a thing. Informed consent within the Declaration of Helsinki is in violation of that. That's an international thing. The Nuremberg Codes, out of which came these meetings, obviously out of the attempt by Hitler to force injections, it was that all informed consent. You could not, no government could, without violation of basic human rights, force an individual to put something into their body for whatever reason, under what any circumstance, without complete and full informed consent. And certainly for any doctor, any person in the medical profession who has taken the Hippocratic Oath, Joe, to do no harm, for them to encourage a person to take a shot is, in fact, a violation of that. I'm just touching on the surface of it. Employers, well, why are employers even wanting to do it? Well, I'm going to submit that the employers that are stepping up and saying that they have some reason to tell their employees to do it, in almost every case that I have seen, they have some incestuous relationship with the federal government and are taking some amount of taxpayer funding by which the federal government, who cannot by law force citizens to submit to such a thing, are coercively forcing employers to whom there is some relationship money-wise to do their bidding for them. That's how I would answer it. This is in every regard, Joe. It is, by definition, it's tyranny and coercion, and we need to understand it as such.
Absolutely, Sam. And those are great points that you made. Just a quick story that I had shared with you a little while ago. There's a young man who's in prison, and I'm mentoring him. He's working on getting out, and they forced him to take the vaccine. And basically what they said to him was that if you don't take this vaccine, you're going to be on lockdown 23 hours a day, and you won't be able to have any visitors. And also, it may affect your ability to get out when you put in your paperwork. And so, of course, he had no choice but to take it. But just so many different stories out there. When we come back after the break, we're going to have Jeremy Samick, who is senior counsel for the PA Family Institute. And we're going to talk a little bit more about My Body, My Choice, religious exemptions, and the pro-choice agenda here on Stand in the Gap Today.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God and His works. They create critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions ensure instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and create new solutions. That's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Who do you really serve? Joshua's challenge to God's people revealed that many people bowed down to other gods, even among those who claimed to know the name of the Lord. Hello, I'm Sam Rohr with another Stand in the Gap Minute. In ancient Israel, Joshua challenged the Jewish people to serve the Lord. And why was this needed? Well, despite more than 40 years of freedom from Egyptian slavery, many evidently continued to privately serve the idols of their past. In Joshua 24:15, Joshua chose to lead by example by proclaiming, "But as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." Now what about you? despite the influence of modern idols? Will you uphold following the Lord in your home? Don't let the distractions of this world turn your eyes from the one who has changed you. May our response be as the people told Joshua, "We also will serve the Lord, for He is our God." Discover more at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at StandInTheGapRadio.com.
And we're back. My name is Joe Green. I'm here with the Honorable Sam Rohrer, and we're going to welcome our guest, Jeremy Samick of the PA Family Institute. But I want to share another example of what we're talking about today. Delta Airlines has become the latest American company to mandate the coronavirus vaccine, as the airline told unvaccinated employees they will have to pay an additional $200 per month for their company-sponsored health care plan. Chief Executive Ed Bastian said in a staff memo that the monthly surcharge would take effect on November 1st. This will pose a real dilemma for those who do not want to take the CV shot. Many will have to choose being able to support their family or taking the shot. This will put many into a very precarious situation, and Delta Airlines is just one of many other companies that are doing similar things. And, you know, it's very sad to think about, and I've talked to people personally, a lot of people around me that are facing the same dilemma. So this is a real thing that we're all going to have to deal with in one way or another, it seems. Jeremy Samick serves as senior counsel with Pennsylvania Family Institute and the Independence Law Center, where he plays an integral role on the legal and legislative policy teams. Since joining the staff in May 2015, Samick's legal efforts have focused on the protection of religious liberty, protecting human life, strengthening the family, and the elimination of sex trafficking. Samick believes that religious liberty is the cornerstone of all freedoms. Prior to joining, he gave lectures on religious liberty issues, counseled nonprofit and religious institutions, and worked pro bono on religious liberty cases in federal district court and the United States Supreme Court while he was an attorney at Eckert, Simmons, Charon, and Mellett, LLC in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Aside from pro bono religious liberty work, Jeremy represented clients in federal and state courts in commercial litigation, consumer protection, OSHA, U.S. Customs, and product liability disputes. Welcome to the program, Jeremy.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Jeremy, can you speak about the employer mandates and how they affect individual constitutional rights?
Yeah, so here's the I'm going to try to start from the beginning and then work our way forward. So in the early part of the last century, I think it was around 1905 or such, there was a Supreme Court case dealing with a vaccine and went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And unfortunately, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that a state can force somebody to have a vaccine. Now, that's not something that has really come up a lot since then. In fact, in Pennsylvania, we do have some vaccine mandates from our state legislature when it comes to other vaccines, not the COVID vaccines, for school students. So if you go to a private school or a public school in Pennsylvania, there are certain requirements that you must get your children vaccinated. However, statutorily, we provide exceptions based on religion, where the parent can write a letter to the school saying, for religious reasons, we're not going to take the vaccine. And you can also get a doctor's note for a medical reason to be exempt from that. So this is something that has existed for a long time in the state of Pennsylvania. And so now we're experiencing this same thing, but only applied to people in the workplace. And it's not a state requirement, but instead it's a employer requirement. So here's the problem. States certainly have less right to impose burdens, arbitrary burdens especially, that would potentially violate constitutional rights than private employers. Private employers have more. The Constitution isn't a check normally on private employers. It's usually a check on the government. So we live in a world now where I think the government is forcing or coercing or at the very least requesting private businesses to do this, whether it's because of some sort of carrot and stick type of situation or whether it's just, hey, do this because we think this is the altruistic thing to do. We live in a world now where employers are saying, get this vaccine or else. Even though the Constitution doesn't apply in the same way to religious employers, we have state law. So in Pennsylvania, well, let's talk about a few other states. In Montana, they just passed a law that prohibits not only governments, but also employers from forcing people to have vaccines in order to be employed. They have an exception if the interest in workplace safety, it's necessary, but it's very narrow in their circumstances when they would do that. Arkansas has another state law that prohibits state and local agencies from requiring COVID vaccines as a condition of employment or education or entry facilities. So these are states with really good laws that protect you. In Pennsylvania, we don't have those specific laws other than the ones that I just referred to when I talk about education. So what does that mean for employers? Well, in employers, you still can't discriminate. So the short answer right now, based on the court cases that have come down, unfortunately, is that employers can mandate vaccines. There's been lawsuits filed around the country, and they're getting some bad results where they're saying, yes, employers can require these things. However, you can still get a medical exemption, and you can, based on Americans with Disabilities Act and also state non-discrimination laws based on a disability or medical condition, and employers, even private employers, have to provide religious exemptions.
And Jeremy, let me follow up with you on that another level or aspect of this. There are two things, and I want you to comment on it, because you've referred to vaccines and so forth. But in the case of this, with the COVID-19, it doesn't meet the definition of vaccine by law. That's number one. It's not a vaccine. So the court cases prior that talk about vaccines meet a legal definition of what, in fact, is a vaccine. This one does not, number one. Number two, because of that, and because the FDA or CDC have only given this particular one temporary emergency use authorization, it does not even meet the criteria of anything legitimately to be passed along. So it's historic. It's never happened before that anything would be discussed. So you've got two significant problems. And here I'm going to tie it to the employer now. The pharmaceutical companies have been given immunity from liability for harm done by the shot because of incestuous relationship with the federal government. I'm going to say that flat out, that's what it is. However, employers do not hold immunity from liability. So if an employer on their own goes ahead and does what the government cannot do, the employer, as I have always believed the law, become liable for any adverse reaction from a mandate on an employee such as this. They become liable, do they not? What are your comments?
Yeah, I'll take those in reverse order. So I have not seen any cases filed yet, and there may have been, or maybe there's just not any decision made where somebody has because of an employer mandate, received the vaccine, had adverse reactions, and then sued the employer. So that is certainly something that's still a possibility. And
I will say that that's in the works.
Force it.
I will say that that's in the works, Jeremy. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that. Mm-hmm. So I would agree with you that there is no protection for employers in that. So. You could face liability for forcing employees to take a vaccine against their will in order to keep employment, who are then subjected to some sort of adverse reaction. So then your first question was related to some of these vaccines are not in the typical or the traditional definition of what a vaccine is. Now, my understanding I will put an asterisk next to what I'm about to say next, because I have not looked into this deeply enough, but I believe the Pfizer is an mRNA vaccine, the Moderna is an mRNA vaccine, and AstraZeneca maybe as well. I believe Johnson & Johnson is not and would fit within the more traditional. Okay, I don't know the argument as to why they don't.
Yeah, J&J fits within what's called a DNA, but it uses an mRNA process to deliver a DNA implantation into the cells. All the rest of them that you mentioned are mRNA-based, and because of the fact that none of them hold anything relative to the virus, they do not meet the definition of vaccine. Anyways, let's go ahead.
Gotcha.
Go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so with that said, and I appreciate you clearing that up for me. With that said, I want to talk about one of the arguments that you brought up before. Like, isn't this a violation of the Nuremberg Code or experimental vaccines and requiring people to get these would violate that because you're forcing them to engage in medical experimentation? Unfortunately, those arguments have been made in courts. The only case that I'm aware of that has come down on any sort of decision on this was from the Southern District of Texas, and they dismissed that argument. Unfortunately, they said that they don't see the analogy, and they dismissed that argument wholesale and just said, yeah, you have to get it, subject to the medical and religious exemptions.
Now, Jeremy, this is really good for people to know. Another thing I wanted to ask you guys, now, one of you mentioned about, you know, how they use fetal tissue in the process. I've been told, and I'm still doing the research, that some of them don't use aborted fetal tissue. Is that correct? Some of the vaccines?
No, that's not correct. All of the vaccines for COVID have used fetal stem cell lines, either in the design, the confirmation, and the continued production. For Johnson & Johnson and mm-hmm. AstraZeneca, both of those use it in all three of those areas, design, confirmation, and the continued production of their shot.
Hold that thought, Jeremy. We're going to go to a break, and then we'll be back with Jeremy Samick and Sam Rohrer, and we're talking about My Body, My Choice. This is Stand in the Gap Today. We'll be back after these messages.
When you tune in to Stand in the Gap Today, you'll hear relevant, applicable information to help you better understand the cultural issues of our time. The biased liberal media narrative confuses and distorts the truth, but our hosts and guests provide focused analysis by combining personal experience with wisdom taken from God's Word. One of our frequent guests, George Barna, had this to say.
We know from the research that I've been doing that churches are not terribly interested these days in helping people understand and know how to think biblically about the issues and the conditions and situations that we face. And so that's one of the things that I love about being on your show is that I know every time I go on, it's not just going to be an exercise. We're trying to push people closer to biblical truth. And that's worth getting out of bed in the morning for.
Tune in to Stand in the Gap today by visiting our website at standinthegapmedia.org. That's standinthegapmedia.org.
Here's Twyla Braves with today's Health Freedom Minute.
Delta Airlines employees who have chosen not to get a COVID shot will be forced to pay $200 extra each month for their health insurance, and they will not get sick pay if they get COVID. But in a discriminatory move, when vaccinated employees get COVID, they will get sick pay. There's no common sense in this or any recognition of human rights. The goal is complete submission. Will employees be forced to choose between groceries and their God-given right not to be injected? While some say hospitals have long forced flu shots, it's only because they're seeking higher quality scores from the government, not because they're protecting patients. Delta employees must hold the line, even at the cost of $2,400 a year or litigation. If they don't win now, expect more genetic and other required injections in the future. They must stand now.
Help us secure health freedom for all. Visit cchfreedom.org. That's cchfreedom.org. Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
Greetings. This is Joe Green. I'm here with Sam Rohr and Jeremy Samick of the PA Family Institute. We're talking about My Body, My Choice, and how the vaccine's mandates relate to the pro-life movement. Jeremy, you were explaining before the break, I'm working with some people, as I mentioned before, who are trying to exercise their religious exemption in taking the vaccine with their employers. And the one pushback was that not all of the vaccines use aborted fetal tissue. And you said this is what this person received as pushback. Can you finish your explanation? You said that all of them use, in certain parts of the process, aborted fetal tissue.
Yeah, that's right. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the AstraZeneca University of Oxford vaccine use fetal stem cell lines in the design, the conformation, and the continued production of the vaccine. The Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine both used the stem cell lines from aborted babies in the testing, but not in the production. And so, look, with conscience issues, with religious conscience issues, different believers have come down in different places. There are some who say, you know, I'm fine with all of it. There are others who say, I would never take those two that are used in the confirmation design and continued production, but I don't have a problem with using ones just in the testing. And, you know, people can agree to disagree there, but employers and the government can't deny religious accommodations based on that. And quite frankly, when enough people are saying, hey, we're not going to take this vaccine that are using aborted baby stem cells and cell lines through this process, eventually somebody's going to come up and say, you know what, we're not going to do this anymore. When we're doing medical procedure and medical testing and creating drugs or vaccines, we're not going to utilize aborted babies anymore. And so that's a good result, no matter where we are on vaccines generally or on this vaccine in particular. These medical companies that do this sort of research need to know that people are not going to utilize it whenever they've killed unborn babies and then used their bodies in this way.
Jeremy, let me follow up with you on that. And what you're saying there is, from a moral argumentation perspective, is significant. And that is, why am I going to agree to have anything put in my body that has come to this point as a result of killing an innocent baby? All right, that is the pro-life argument. Let me take and extend that now and say, all right, well, that is a pretty significant moral argument. So, in light of the fact that we have modern government and many agencies of government today saying, you're going to take this thing regardless of what you say, we're going to penalize you, make you pay $200 if you're an employee, or we're going to, as the mayor of New York saying, try to make the restaurants say, we're not going to let you in if you have not taken one of these shots, or all of these things that we're going to fire you if you don't take it. All right, well, that really brings it down to where the rubber meets the road. An individual who says, I have a problem, morally, for that reason. But then if I laid out some of the others, there's informed consent. There is just, frankly, a right of conscience. I don't want to because I'm not convinced this is good for my health, as an example, whatever that may be. So to what degree is this now a challenge of the strength of one's moral conviction as compared to one's moral preference? In other words, do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, is it a conviction or is it a preference? Should they be back away from it because they can get convinced, well, I can override this concern about that aborted babies were involved in this shot and because I need to work? Mm-hmm. Should I draw the line because I'm saying, no, I can't compromise this moral conviction? So, all right, what are you saying on that regard?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's certainly something that each individual is going to have to decide for themselves. And with any issue that arises to the level of our conscience-based belief, based on what we believe God is telling us through His Word, is we have to count the cost. We absolutely have to count the cost. And so when people contact us at independencelaw.org/vaccine to get help with doing religious opt-out letters, we talk through that with them and say, you know, is this something that arises to the level of religious belief that you believe that you personally just cannot get it and you're willing to risk your job over it? Or is this something that's just a preference? Because if it's just a preference, then don't file a religious objection. If this is something that you deeply believe and that you're willing to lose your job over it, then file the religious objection. Now, here's the good news. You shouldn't, barring certain circumstances, if you work in a nursing home with people who are 90 years old that have bad lungs, the employer has the ability to say, look, we're going to re-task you to do something different, work with less at-risk patients, and require some reasonable accommodations. And some of those accommodations aren't going to make all of us happy either. But so once you ask for that reasonable accommodation based on your deeply held religious belief, then the employer has to provide it, provided that it doesn't provide an undue burden on the employer. And in this circumstances, sometimes that might be wearing a mask. It might require you to get reassigned to a different job function. Those are all costs that we need to consider before making the religious accommodation request.
I think it's so important for all of us to look at that. Well, as I was researching this topic, and I saw where some of the legislators and some of the judges ruled against religious exemptions because they said that they found that a lot of people were misusing that, which I don't think is really a reason for them to kind of rule against the religious exemption. But nevertheless, there are people that would use that religious exemption, but yet they're not really convicted religiously. You know, some of them may not even practice faith, but they may use this as simply a way to get out of that. So I think it's important, Jeremy, that you mentioned that you have those conversations with people, because each and every one of us have to make a decision. We have to make a spiritual decision as to what we believe, what we stand for, and why we believe that. And of course, as me and Sam and all the people that are associated with this program, we always look at it from a biblical worldview, because we know that as Christians, that is the basis for our moral and our spiritual foundations. You know, I want to just really quick transition. Sam, you wanted to add something to that before I go to the next segment?
Joe, I do. People are listening to this and are saying, wow, man, you're helping probably, you know, maybe you're not helping me quite enough, because everybody wants a hard and fast automatic answer.
Mm-hmm.
I know across this Commonwealth right now, citizens by the thousands are contacting pastors as a part of our Pennsylvania Pastors Network here in Pennsylvania, where I'm sitting. They are contacting the legislators here in Pennsylvania, seeking their help. Because they are in positions where they're being told, you will take this or you will not be a nurse in this hospital. You've got hospital organizations across the state of Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that are by the hundreds saying, we're not going to submit to this because they know that it is harmful health-wise. And they're saying, how do I do this? So some are coming at it medically, some are coming at it. But I'm just looking at here the Constitution, the Pennsylvania Constitution, which I like. It's really great. And William Penn laid down the foundation for it. Here are just a couple things here. Religious freedom, Article 1, Section 3, talks about all men having a natural, indefeasible right. And it talks about government and others. No human authority can, in any case whatsoever, control or interfere with the rights of conscience. And then it talks about some other things, but rights of conscience, bear that in mind. Nobody has the right to interfere with rights of conscience. Section 7, freedom of the press, talks about the free communication of thoughts and opinions is an invaluable right of man. And, of course, you talked about at the beginning of the program how we know that certain information on this subject, many people say, we're not going to allow you to talk about it, so it's a violation of that. And then I go to the Section 25, the last piece, next last section of the Article 1. And it says, all of this is in here to guard against the transgressions of the high powers, that often is civil authority, but not necessarily only that. It says, we declare that everything in this article, Article 1, the sections I just read, is accepted out of the general powers of government, meaning government has no ability to infringe upon what I just read, and it shall forever remain inviolate. Now, I share that only from the standpoint that in this Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, religious freedom is profoundly important. It became the model for the rest of the country. But the Constitution says the rights of conscience as given by God, the right to speak about it openly and freely, is forever inviolate and no human authority. And I'm going to suggest that that's employer or government has any right to compromise or force an individual to compromise that. That is the Constitution. No matter if we try to make it legal or not, it is never lawful or constitutional or moral because of that.
Wow, great point, Sam. We'll be back after the break with Jeremy Samick of the PA Family Institute and Sam Rohrer and myself, Joe Green, and we're talking about My Body, My Choice and how the vaccine mandates relate to the pro-life movement.
For years, faithful Christians formed nonprofit foundations or trusts to preserve their ability to generously give to their favorite causes or ministries, even after their death. The problem? Professional managers, pressure from left-wing agendas, and even family members with opposing views hijacked the original donor intent. This is sad, but true. But this subversion of purpose can be prevented. Hello, I'm Sam Rohrer of the American Pastors Network, and I'm glad to recommend Capstone Legacy Foundation in Wayne, Pennsylvania, an experienced and capable Christian community foundation established to help you set up a ministry, a giving structure guaranteed not to be hijacked, or a place you can donate cash or non-cash assets like stocks, bonds, or property. Capstone's designed to help you achieve immediate tax savings and give you needed time to decide how to prayerfully allocate your giving. Contact Capstone at 610-688-8890 or visit them at capstonelegacy.org.
Thanksgiving is about gratitude. The Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. G.K. Chesterton said gratitude was nearly the greatest of all human duties and nearly the most difficult. It's the greatest because, as Paul wrote to the church at Corinth, what do we have we did not receive? Truth, tradition, technology, medicine, democracy, relative peace, these are all things given to us by those who've gone before. And yet, to paraphrase Jesus, even pagans can give thanks when things are going well. Expressing gratitude in a year like this, that's much more difficult. Things, let's say, could have been better, and we mourn for our friends and neighbors who face sickness, death, financial struggle, and relational fractures throughout this year. Gratitude in difficult times is what Jonathan Edwards called gracious gratitude. We give thanks, not just for what God has done for us, not just for what we've received, but for who He is. This gratitude is relational, not conditional. Though our world may shatter, we're secure in the One who's made us and who saved us, and we can never be separated from His love. I'm John Stone Street.
This is Tim Barton from Wall Builders with another moment from American history. America is a special and unique nation. The average length for a constitution in other countries is only 17 years, but we've had ours for over two centuries. And our 4% of the world's population produces 24% of the world's gross domestic product. And every year we produce more inventions and technology than the other 96% of the world combined. In 1831, Alexis de Tocqueville of France came to America, traveled the country, and in his famous book, Democracy in America, reported, "The position of the Americans is therefore quite exceptional, and it may be believed that no democratic people will ever be placed in a similar one." This is the origin of the phrase American exceptionalism, and affirms that America is unique because of the distinctive ideas on which we have been based, including inalienable rights, individualism, limited government, and the importance of religion and morality. For more information about American exceptionalism, go to wallbuilders.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
And we're back. My name is Joe Green, along with Sam Rohrer and Jeremy Samick of the PA Family Institute. And we're talking today about My Body, My Choice and how the vaccine mandates relate to the pro-life movement. We started off talking about how employer mandates are seen by many as a violation of the constitutional rights and religious liberties. The phrase My Body, My Choice is being used by many people that oppose these mandates. I think it's interesting that many legislators have fought for a woman's right to choose using this model, yet not as many are fighting for the same sentiment in regard to the CV mandates. Jeremy, if you can talk a little bit about how these two things intersect, if you will, My Body, My Choice and pro-life versus pro-choice movements.
Yeah. Well, when you just go back to the basics, you've heard my right to swing my fist ends whenever it hits somebody else's face, right? We certainly have freedoms, but there's limits on those freedoms when we start harming others. And so where we draw that line is an important function of our state governments or local governments or federal governments. But by and large, when you think about just a general rule, we understand that I don't have the freedom to swing my fist right where your face is. And when we, and it's about proximity. So with abortion, we understand that what is abortion? Abortion is the purposeful killing of an innocent human life. That is the goal of abortion. In fact, I always tell people, how do we know that abortion isn't healthcare, unlike what our Attorney General Josh Shapiro constantly tweets out? Well, we know that abortion isn't healthcare because a successful procedure ends in the death of somebody, and an unsuccessful or a botched procedure means that somebody accidentally ended up living, right? The very purpose of that procedure is to kill an innocent human being. So when people talk about, hey, it's my body, my choice when it comes to abortion, well, you know what? It's two bodies. There are two bodies, and the purpose of your activity is to kill somebody else. So no, your bodily, your right over your body doesn't encompass the right to kill another human being. Now, let's take the vaccine. Taking a vaccine, the argument goes that if you take the vaccine, then it's less likely that you'll get it, or it's less likely that you'll pass it on, even though that we know that a lot of those things are big buts. But let's just, for the sake of argument, accept that you're less likely to pass it on to other people if you're vaccinated. Well, you know what? There's a lot of intervening causes. There's a lot of intervening things that happen. Number one, not getting a vaccine, there's no intent to kill another human being. There's no purpose in killing another human being. Do those kind of things happen? Well, maybe, but you know, it also happens with driving a car, right? When we all have accepted the risk of driving a car, and we understand that there's intervening circumstances that can happen, weather, accidents, depending on your age, depending on your eyesight, but we all accept the risk, and there's no intent to kill another human being when accidents happen. And that same thing is true here. But yet we have a government now who's perfectly willing to violate bodily autonomy claims when it comes to something that has, at the best, a remote chance that that's going to result in somebody else's death. But where we have a purposeful one-for-one exchange of killing another human being, we somehow want to accept this bodily autonomy, my body, my choice argument. It doesn't make sense. I've seen a lot of people who are opposed to forcing COVID vaccine argue that, hey, this is just like abortion. It's my body, my choice. And I say, no, it's not like abortion at all, because that's a one-for-one purposeful killing of another human being. This isn't even remotely similar.
Well, Jeremy, I'm trying to make the connection here now. So clearly what Joe asked you and what you're saying is that from those who would support abortion, and as you described it, they're right because of whatever reason they don't want to carry this new life to completion and therefore justify the killing of that under the basis that it is my body. I have a right to make a determination with my body. You're making the point, I think, what Joe asked as well, is that that group of people, at least, that group who are supporting the killing of babies, ought to be out there equally supporting the right of every law-abiding citizen to say, I am not convinced that this shot is in any way good for me. I haven't seen any evidence. It's not approved. It's not gone through testing. It is experimental, and therefore, I don't want that in my body, so therefore it's my body. Are you saying that those people ought to be out there defending the rights of those who don't want to take the shot?
Oh, absolutely. If you are pro-abortion and you're using the bodily autonomy argument as a reason for justifying being pro-abortion, then not only should you support somebody's right not to get the COVID vaccine, you would almost have to support somebody's right to walk out knowing that they're COVID positive and going around and coughing in people's faces while they're COVID positive, with the intent of, I don't even care if they die. Because that's that one-for-one exchange. That's that direct, purposeful nexus to killing another human being that they're supporting when they support the right to kill an unborn baby, right? Nobody is walking around and saying that we should be able to walk and cough in other people's faces when we know that we have a disease that could potentially kill them. So it's a much, much... it's a much less of a stretch to say, hey, listen, you shouldn't force people to take a vaccine for the reason with using this argument that, hey, somebody potentially could catch COVID from you and could potentially die from that, with the multiple intervening causes that come with that. Namely, the person who might catch that from you, they have the ability to get the vaccine. They have the ability to wear masks. They have the ability to socially distance from you. So they have a responsibility as well. But yeah, the people who support purposeful killing of an innocent human life have no business supporting vaccine mandates.
Well, those are great points, Jeremy. And also, I wanted to, in the few moments that we have, can you give some insight to those people who would like to apply for a religious exemption from their employer mandates? Just some basic things on how they can word it or what methods they can use in order to avoid being forced into this.
Yeah, I think the first thing I would say is start positive. Talk about why you value your position as an employee or a student at the university. Talk about your religious beliefs as to why you can't take that, whether if it's the use of aborted stem cell lines. Make that clear. Don't mix in other causes. Don't mix in your medical beliefs when it comes to this. Don't mix in other sort of political or philosophical type beliefs. Keep it to your religious beliefs, because that's one way that in court cases, even dealing with things like flu vaccines, have caused people not to be granted a religious accommodation, because they'll call it a religious accommodation, and then all the arguments that they use are all medical objections or political objections to it. And so make sure that you stick to your religious reason for not taking it. One of the things that we're seeing quite frequently are employers now who are mandating employees who request a religious accommodation to get their pastor or their church or some statement of faith. You do not need to do that. The EEOC, the Federal Employment Equal Opportunities Commission, has said numerous times in other contexts with religious accommodations that the employer's right to get a religious accommodation is not contingent on whether their pastor or even the denomination or church that they belong to agrees with them or holds the same religious beliefs. So it is not necessary and it is not required to get a religious accommodation in order to do that. It's okay if you want to do that, if your pastor or your denomination agrees with you, but it is not required. So
Very good information.
I think to put out, yeah.
Yeah, well, we thank you so much, Jeremy, for sharing such great information. We also thank you, as usual, Sam, for the great input that you have. And I would just encourage everyone that you have to make these choices for yourself. Of course, spend time in prayer, use the Bible as your guide, and make these decisions not only for yourself, but your family. And I know that everyone will be okay, and stay safe out there. This has been Joe Green, and thank you for tuning in to Stand in the Gap today. Until next time, peace and blessings to you. And always, always keep your eyes on Jesus.
If you liked today's program, tell a friend. You'll also want to hear Stand in the Gap Weekend and watch the nationally syndicated Stand in the Gap TV program. We present the news of the day truthfully, carefully, and consistently from a biblical worldview and constitutional perspective. If you're hungry for the truth, visit standinthegapmedia.org to find all our programs and the stations that carry them. While you're there, be sure to download our free app and support this ministry with your best financial gift. Then join us again right here Monday through Friday for another program of Stand in the Gap Today.